Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hi there, how are you doing? I just want to start by saying a huge, huge thank you to everyone who fed back, commented, liked, shared, just really enjoyed my chat with Elle Wright. It was just so well received, and I totally understand why. Elle is just such a lovable person. She really is. She's just beautiful inside and out. So yeah, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you if you listened, and if you've found me since then, welcome. And I also like to say hi and welcome back to those of you who have been around for a lot longer too. You are all so welcome here. Since that last episode, there has been so much going on in the world. On top of the existing COVID situation, and we're all still feeling quite upside down about that. Lockdown is easing, but we are still in lockdown. The huge issue of racism has been brought to the front and centre of everyone's lives. This is obviously a really, really good thing, and it's only devastating that it's had to come out of so much tragedy. There is so much information out there right now, and that is so positive, you know, and we are all doing everything we can to educate ourselves and to learn. What I would say, though, is don't be too hard on yourself if you can't take it all in straight away, if you can't read every book you've seen recommended, if you can't take part in every march, you know. If you can ask yourself, am I making the changes I need to? Am I doing all that I can right now? And the answer is yes, then you are doing enough. Let's face it, this isn't something that is going to happen overnight. And whilst we all have a responsibility to do what we can, something that I have learned over the last few years is that you can't pour from an empty cup. So we really do, especially if you are finally pregnant right now, we really do need to look after ourselves in order to be able to look after other people. So I just want to remind you of that. Like many of you, I'm doing what I can in my personal and professional life. And one of the things that I want to do more of is amplifying melanated voices. So I want to echo the ask that I made on Instagram, in case you don't follow me there. If you're black and you want to share your finally pregnant story, please do get in touch. At this time, I'm particularly looking for people to host a takeover on my account. So you will need to be confident in sharing your story publicly and chatting to the camera, etc. If that's you, please do drop me an email at kat@katstrawbridge.com or send me a DM over on Instagram @tryingyears. If you're not happy to be so public, but you have another idea of how you can take part, please do contact me. I'm really, really open to lots and lots of conversations around this. One of the things that has been raised following all of the unrest around the world right now, whatever that may be, is that a lot of people are feeling pretty unsettled, which is totally understandable, and it is for a lot of different reasons. If on top of that, you are finally pregnant right now, you might be feeling this more than most, and I suspect there have been really significant moments of overwhelm, which I'm really, really sorry to hear if that's the case. I really want you to be kind to yourselves, to take the time you need to switch off as and when you can. I also want to remind you that at the end of next week, I'm holding a Midsummer Nurture Circle for you. The workshop that Helen of Northern Sky Yoga Club is preparing is incredibly special and will not only help you in that moment, because you'll spend 90 minutes in the company of others who just get it, along with Helen talking you through a number of techniques, including journaling, yoga, and breath work. But you'll also be able to pick and choose from everything Helen shows you. You might choose all of it, who knows? And create your very own toolbox so that you can better support yourself throughout your pregnancy and beyond. Over half of the tickets have already sold out, and the event is at the end of next week. It's next Saturday, Saturday the 20th of June. So head over to the link in the show notes, or there is a link over on my bio on Instagram, and grab your tickets now. Remember, if you are a member of the Hangout, you receive a discount on your ticket. So make sure that you head over to the resources document to check out that discount. The resources document is a place where I am just storing recommendations of books, of podcasts, discounts, research, just everything. And it's building daily so that all of the members have that go-to place where they can look for information. And I'm really excited that that is building. Other things that are happening over at the Hangout is that I have introduced a third support group to our lineup. So now we have one for those who are finally pregnant. We also have one, this is the new one, for those who are finally parenting. And then we also have one with a guest speaker each month who generally covers both areas. So they'll often talk about the three trimesters of pregnancy and then also the fourth trimester and possibly beyond. Some of the speakers we've had include Mel Brown, who's an amazing nutritionist. We've also spoken about relationships with Julianne from Parenthood in Mind. And next month, we have got Claire from Claire Bourne Physio talking about exercise, which is really exciting. The speaker presentations are recorded, so as soon as you join, you have access to all of these recordings. Again, all of the links to everything I mention are in the show notes and over on my Instagram. So, on to this week's episode, which is a really, really special one for me because I'll be sharing Ren's birth story. Oh, I really hope you enjoy it too. This episode comes out on Ren's first birthday. Can you believe it? Oh, honestly, they say time flies. Honestly, they really, really mean it. So whilst you're listening to this, I'll be celebrating a whole year of our beautiful little miracle. We're having family come up and shift to sit in the garden and wave happy birthday. Please let the weather be nice. It's obviously not the birthday we had planned, but the main thing is, you know what? She's here and I can give her a hug. I wish my family could hug her too, but you know. That will come. We've bought her very little, I'll be honest. We bought her a kitchen, which I've been told is the best first birthday present because they will get years of use from it. And we got ours actually in the closing down sale of Mothercare months ago. So we didn't spend too much on it. I've bought her a couple of books and that is really about it. No doubt she'll get plenty from family. Although, to be honest, she gets that all year round already from her cousin's hand-me-downs. So we are very, very lucky. I had meant to record this episode last year. In fact, I did actually start recording it when Ren was 4 months old, but got called away, no doubt, to feed her and never got the opportunity to come back and finish it. But it was so amazing. I've got to be honest, revisiting the notes I made then and thinking back to that time. And I'm actually kind of grateful that I'm doing it now rather than then. I've also been rewatching lots of my stories from then too over on Instagram, and it's really made me quite teary. The support we received while I was in hospital and ever since and before, to be honest, but particularly around that time at the moment, it was just immense. And I want to say an extra special thank you to each and every one of you for everything you do to support me. You guys truly, truly are the best. So on to the actual birth story. And if you're thinking, how do you remember everything that's happened? I do feel like I remembered a lot, but actually I went back to my hospital a couple of months after Ren was born and had a session called Birth Afterthoughts. Now, that's what it's called at my hospital. It might be called something different. I think I've heard Birth Reflections, but basically you go back and you meet with a midwife who talks you through all of the notes that were made during the birth, really. So from the moment I went in on the 5th of June for my induction to the, well, this goes up to Ren being born and a couple of hours later. It was invaluable and I really enjoyed it. What I will say is that I was so excited about going back. I've got a real romantic view on Ren's birth, should I say. And when I went back, it was quite factual, it was a bit of an anticlimax. However, it was lovely to know exactly what happened and to have that record. You know, it's something that I will keep. I recorded mine. I did ask if I could record the audio and that was fine. And obviously I've made notes since then. And it's just, yeah, I've just really enjoyed reading over it and recording it now. So if that's something you might want to do, then I recommend you make an appointment. And you don't have to have just given birth to do it. In my hospital and perhaps with all the others, you can do it up to 5 years after. That's all for now, other than to just hand you over to me. For me to, tell you how Ren was born. On Wednesday, the 5th of June, 2019, I went to the SAR Award at Adam Brooks Hospital, ready for my pre-planned induction at 39 weeks, finally pregnant. The plan that I had made with consultants was that I was going to be induced, but that I would have a fairly low threshold time-wise for C-section. We talked about 48 hours. When I was admitted, I was checked over and my cervix was completely closed. The first part of the induction happened pretty quickly once I got settled in, and a pessary called Propess was inserted, and that stays in for 24 hours. I was regularly checked with a CTG, and that means that they are checking for Ren's heartbeat. It's so funny talking about it now, because at the time we didn't know it was Ren. You know, like, that name was definitely in our head and she was going to be called Ren, but now I know her and her personality and stuff, so it's so funny to think about her in there, like a teeny tiny baby who we hadn't met, but it's lovely. So I had that first pessary and quite quickly had like cramping and tightening, but nothing significant. The next day, the pessary was removed and my cervix hadn't changed. So I was given another pessary, this time called Prostin, for 6 hours. Again, period-type pains, but nothing significant. At that point, inductions were put on hold in my hospital. Now, this was something that made the whole process really difficult at the time and really affected my mental health, because there was a lot of stopping and starting because of issues with the number of beds that were available in the delivery suite. And so they were really trying to manage the inductions. And, you know, we were lucky we got in, we got a bed where other people had been delayed. But yeah, the stopping and starting made this whole process very slow, and a situation where you already, you know what's going to happen. You're going to have a baby, but you don't really know how it's going to happen. And especially when it's your first, you just don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, it made it really, really difficult, all the stopping and starting, which wasn't great. But anyway, so the inductions were put on hold. And Friday morning, I wanted to speak to my consultant about moving to a C-section, as we had previously agreed that after 48 hours that was going to be the plan. And my cervix had started to soften. The way that this was explained by a midwife was that it starts off firm like the end of your nose, but they want it to be soft like your lip. Also that morning, I had lost my mucus plug, and I have looked this up for you in case you haven't heard of a mucus plug before. The NCT say that during pregnancy, your cervix is sealed by a plug of mucus, which normally stays in place until the start or close to the start of labour. This plug acts as an additional barrier, protecting your baby from bacteria. You can lose it up to 2 weeks before, but some people don't even notice. So there you go. If you didn't know that before, you do now. We unfortunately didn't get to speak to the consultant on Friday, which was incredibly disappointing, but inductions were restarted. So we had the second Prostin at 7 p.m. that evening and then one again through the night. So, you know, we felt like things were moving again. So that was a real positive. Saturday, the 8th of June, my cervix was showing signs of progression. So that was great. My consultant suggested to try one more Prostin, and if we couldn't break my waters at that point, we'd move to C-section. So, like I said, my cervix was showing signs of progression. It was softening and shortening, and Ren's head was also putting pressure on it. We were reassured that that was a positive change from previous examinations, which was great. And the midwife said that it would be possible for a doctor to perform an ARM, which is an artificial rupture of membranes. But it was recommended that I try, you know, the fourth Prostin just to help it along a bit further. So we went ahead with that. Just before that midwife went off shift, she came to check me again, which was wonderful. And I was then ARMable, as they'd hoped, by a senior midwife or a doctor. I can tell you, I was so nervous at this stage. You have no idea, like I said, what's coming next, but you know that you're getting a baby. So, you know, if you are nervous about it all, I definitely was. And the only thing I can say that got me through it is, you know, you kind of, I know it sounds really lame, but you take one step at a time, you know, 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time. And, you know, things unfold and they happen and you will get there, even if you are scared like I was. And it's okay to be scared. So Saturday night, induction all done, no idea what was going to happen next. That was a really, really difficult night for me, I have to say. Like, what the afterthought notes don't tell you is how you were actually feeling through all of this, how long those days and hours felt. I was absolutely exhausted. I was nervous. Like I said, you know, I was scared about what was going to happen. I was in a tiny cubicle and there was no natural light, so that was actually really oppressive, which wasn't helping at all. I hadn't been prepared for this long wait, and to be honest, I was starting to worry because they had told me that they wanted Ren out at 39 weeks and we were fast heading towards 40, you know? And on top of that, I kept being told that if we did go to C-section, it wouldn't happen that day. So all of that, all in my head, that was a really tough night. And I actually remember getting up in the middle of the night about 3 o'clock and going to the desk in the ward, just crying, absolutely in tears, because I just wanted to move on, to move to the next stage, to know what was happening. I was really, really suffering. And like I say, I hadn't been prepared for that wait, and I hadn't been prepared for the emotional toll that that took. I don't want you to experience that. So if you are having an induction and if there are delays, just make sure you're looking after your mind as well as your physical self. On Sunday mornings, this is the 9th of June, a window cubicle became available, and I cannot tell you the difference it made to my mental health. I still felt anxious, but I could breathe and it was wonderful. So huge, huge thanks to Bob, who totally sorted that out for me and jumped on a cubicle as soon as it came free. In the time I went out to have a shower, he had claimed it and moved all our stuff over to it, which is just, yeah, one of the reasons I married that man. He's the best. So we saw the consultant again that morning, who told us that we would go to the delivery unit that day. However, they did say that there were no promises. So we're still left in this kind of limbo. However, roll on a few hours. At 4 o'clock that afternoon, we were taken over to the delivery unit. Yay! The senior midwife couldn't break my waters, so the doctor came in to do it. I'll be honest, I was really nervous about my waters being broken. I'd heard all of these stories about this huge knitting needle, and I just thought, it's going to be really painful. It wasn't at all. It was a little bit uncomfortable, but mine was particularly tricky by all accounts, but it wasn't too bad. So if that's you going in for that, please try not to worry too much. I was incredibly tense, but it really wasn't painful. We were asked to go for a walk for a couple of hours just to see if, you know, the gravity and the movement helped progress things naturally. But 2 hours later, no change. You know, Ren really was keeping us waiting. She was in no rush to come out and say hello. At this point, you know, they wanted to get on with things. So I was given a cannula in my wrist for the hormone drip. I've still got a scar there now, and it's just, yeah, it's quite special to me, actually. That started at 6:55 on the Sunday. And for a first baby, the maximum rate of the drip is 180 millilitres per hour. I was started on 12 millilitres per hour, and they plan to increase that by 12 mils every 15 minutes. And they're looking for contractions about 4 in every 10 minutes. About half an hour later, I started to use the TENS machine because I had kind of mild period pain. That was fine. Another half an hour later, my midwife changed. Now, that wasn't something I'd really been prepared for, if I'm honest. No one had talked to me and I hadn't asked. But midwives work on 12-hour shifts. And so you can, you know, they can take over your care really at any point during that. So we had one who was really lovely, who was with us for a couple of hours. And then Stacey, who was just an absolute angel, took over for the night shift. So we had her from 8 o'clock for 12 hours, which was amazing. And she made it all really, really, really very special. She was just lovely, and we just chatted loads, and she kept us really informed and was really warm. And yeah, you've got a special place in my heart, Stacey. So I still wasn't feeling contractions at this point, but a bit of cramping. Ren is constantly being checked at this point via a CTG, and my hormone drip was upped to 60 millilitres per hour. The next bit is, I just remember feeling like an absolute car crash for this bit, I went to the toilet. Now, remember, I'm half dressed. I've got the cannula in because they're not going to take this out. I am holding on to, you know, the kind of the stand that has got my drip attached to it. I needed to get a sample of my urine and it was a tiny, tiny cubicle. I just, honestly, I'm amazed that, yeah, it was... I was a complete mess. And yeah, so that wasn't my finest moment, but it is what it is. You get kind of, yeah, you're half naked. Most people are seeing everything. It is what it is, like I say. But fortunately, I feel like that was my only time I had to go to the toilet. I feel like after that, we managed that on the actual bed. The beds are amazing. They're like transformers. Well, the ones that Adam Brooks are, they move into loads and loads of different positions, which is really great because they want to keep you moving as much as possible. Like, you know, not every minute, but they want to kind of turn you from your side to one side, etc. Sitting up, something called the throne position was where I was quite a lot of the time. But anyway, so they continued to increase the hormone drip. And by 10 o'clock, it was 108 milliliters per hour. So still plenty of room to grow. I was contracting well and coping at this point, but I wasn't chatting through them like I had been at the beginning. I really needed to use everything I'd learned and breathe through each one. At 10:17, so I have been in there a few hours by that point. The drip was halted due to delivery unit activity. Now that meant that I think someone else was going through distress, so they wanted to, you know, make sure all of the medical staff could help them as much as possible. By all accounts, it doesn't happen very often. I have to say that because of all the delays I'd experienced before, it was quite frustrating, but it is what it is. And just over an hour later, it restarted, and they restarted at a slightly lower level of 84 milliliters per hour. At 11:50, there was a deceleration of the baby's heartbeat noted, and I was moved, and this was monitored really closely. And again, like thinking about that being Ren and her heart rate, yeah, decelerating is quite upsetting thinking back. But, you know, everything was fine. At my afterthoughts appointment, the midwife showed me what the actual trace looked like, and what they want to see is a zigzag, but the line does flatten here and then when the baby's sleeping. And what they're looking for is the bigger peaks and drops. And that's when they kind of really want to keep a close eye. But, you know, they do want that zigzag. I won't go into all of the ins and outs of that because I'm not a medical professional. But needless to say, everything is being monitored continuously by the midwife. But if you have questions, ask. Between the contractions, I was completely lucid. So, you know, I probably could have had that conversation there. I might have done, to be honest, but I don't remember it. But, you know, if you do have questions, make sure you ask. At midnight, we had a conversation about pain relief and whether or not I wanted an epidural. The truth is, I didn't want an epidural for reasons that I'm not going to go into here. But, you know, it was a personal thing to me. I was given the gas and air so that I could test it to see, you know, how to use it before I was, you know, in a kind of panicked and pained situation. Loved the gas and air, just got to say. Although I did sound like a cow. That's what I felt like sucking in. You probably didn't need to hear that. But and it was more the blowing out. I sound like a ghost now because you have to inhale and exhale through the tube. You know, you can't. It's not like you breathe in and then breathe out into kind of normal air. So just give it a test before you're in the panicked situation. That's what I'd say. But it's really easy, really straightforward. At 1 o'clock, I was 2 centimetres dilated. So I was still not in active labour, which starts at 4 centimetres dilation. But we had spent the hour talking about epidural and other pain reliefs. And at this point, my midwife asked the anaesthetist to come and talk me through what the epidural would be, just in case, you know, the pain got too much and I changed my mind. And I was totally open to that. You know, I knew that this wasn't I don't want one because, you know, I'm going to take the pain. It was for other reasons. And so, you know, I thought, right, I'm going to be really open-minded here. I'm going to hear everything they've got to say and I'll make the decisions as they come up. One of the key things that I took from the anaesthetist was that they become harder to do and therefore a little bit more risky the closer your contractions are to each other, because you need to stay still while it's being done. So that's just something to keep in mind if you are thinking about having an epidural, and even if you're not, but it's something that does come up during your labour. At 2:10 a.m., I decided the pain was too much and I wanted one. So I was really, really pleased that my midwife had kind of foreseen that there might have been a change there and had got the anaesthetist to come and have the chat with me so that we could just crack on. However, something I had been warned about, and of course it was going to happen, was that the anaesthetist, because it was the middle of the night, was in theatre, so couldn't come to me. He actually didn't end up coming for another 3 hours. Ouch. And I will say, genuinely, labour was the most painful thing I've ever experienced. It really, really was. And I know everyone says this, but honestly, it's true. The next day, even though I knew that that was the case, I couldn't remember how painful it was. You know, I still can't remember how it could have been so painful. It was really fucking painful, but it's amazing. So, you know, we move through it, we deal with it, and we have pain relief if we want to, which I did. So, couldn't have the epidural. Cracked on with the gas and air, got very friendly with the gas and air. I also used the TENS machine. At one point, the TENS machine that I had hired was giving me an electric shock. And I was like, is it supposed to be doing that? Part of me felt like it was a good distraction from the contractions. But we did decide to swap it for one of the hospital ones, just in case. At one point during this time, I was sick, which is pretty normal, apparently, and I had some anti-sickness through my IV to stop the nauseousness. You know, so there's so much going on. There really is. And, you know, you've got different people coming in and out. The midwife is with you all the time, pretty much, if not all the time. And other people came in and out. Bob was around. You know, we both tried to get some sleep as and when we could. I bought an eye mask with me, and I recommend bringing an eye mask. I remember at one point, and this we still laugh about this now. So I was on the gas and air, and Bob said it kind of made me like as if I'd had a glass and a half of wine, like a bit tipsy kind of thing. And I remember at one point, there were two midwives in the room and Bob, and I was suddenly, you know, so my version of this is that I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm not sure who's had a cup of coffee, but it's really turning my stomach. You know, can I ask you not to have that near me? Apparently, the version that Bob's got is I was like, who's had the coffee? It's awful. Get rid of it. Yuck. So, you know, there's my version, there's his version, and then there's the truth. I suspect his version is probably more accurate. But yeah, so all of this is going on, which is all good fun, hopefully. And then finally, at 5 o'clock, like I said, 3 hours after asking, totally no one's fault, by the way, there is no blame being allocated there, I received the epidural. The hormone drip was stopped for that procedure, and that had already been lessened because my body had started to do a bit more of the work at that stage as well. The epidural took about 20 minutes to get in place. He did it with one attempt, no complications, which was incredible. For those of you who don't know, the epidural is a flexible catheter and it's put into your spine, so it can deviate to one side over another. In my case, I was painless down my right side. Now, I couldn't remember any of this, truth be told, but, you know, this was read back to me. But at one point, I was painless down my right side, but I could still feel the pain down my left. So I was moved onto my left side to help kind of move the catheter that way a little bit so that it was working on both sides. This is fairly normal. It was all good. So my fears around the epidural, you know, I felt okay about at that point. Going to the toilet, however, I didn't feel so okay about. It was no joke. I couldn't move. You know, my legs are completely anaesthetised. I couldn't feel them. I had no control over them. I couldn't carry my weight on them. So I was put in a throne position, as you can imagine what it's like, on my bed and held over a bedpan. This is pretty, I tell you, by bless poor Stacey and Bob. Like at this point, yeah. Everyone's seen everything, haven't they? So holding me over a bedpan to have a wee, you know, it is is what it is. And you know what? It's kind of all part of the fun. I know that sounds like a really random thing to say, but honestly, I just smile even thinking about it. I loved the whole thing. I really did. Not to say that it wasn't fucking painful, just to reiterate. So anyway, at 6:20, 3 centimetres dilated, like this dilation is not happening quickly for me. Bear in mind, this is 6 o'clock Monday morning. I have been in this hospital since Wednesday. So she is definitely in no hurry. But I was given a stretch and a sweep about 6:20. And following that, I was measured and I was 4 centimetres dilated. Yay! So I've officially hit active labour. Whoop, whoop. We went back to the hormone drip, which had been stopped for a while with the epidural and everything. And we kind of just carried on like that for a little while. We had a moment of calm. Sadly, my lovely angel, Stacey, had to end her shift at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was really, really sad. So I just want to prepare you for that. If you fall in love with your midwife and then they have to leave you and you think, why don't you stay? Please just stay with me. I want you to be there till the end. But they have to go home and sleep. And I know that and I appreciate that. And I was really lucky because Stacey did come and find me the next day to meet Ren and everything. So that was really, really lovely. All of that has taken hours, days in fact, but the next bit happened so quickly. And because of the speed, some bits were actually incredibly frightening, I'll be honest. At 9:11 a.m, there was a prolonged deceleration of Ren's heartbeat noted on the trace. And the midwife that was with me at this point, Evelyn, she had called for a senior midwife to come in with fresh eyes. Now, that's something that happens throughout the time anyway, but she asked for someone to come in and do an extra check. I was contracting 5 in 10 at that point, and the drip was eased to give baby Ren a chance to rest. The CTG was then classed as suspicious, and because of that, my next examination was brought forward. They would anticipate that I would progress, my dilation would progress about 0.5 centimetre every hour. So they were kind of talking about me probably giving birth to Ren that afternoon, possibly into the evening. However, at 9:30, I was checked by the doctor who had come to examine me, and she actually advised for the drip to stop rather than just reduce it, because in the 3 hours since my last check, they would have anticipated that I would be 5.5 centimetres dilated at that point. However, I had dilated 6 centimetres, so that at that point, at 9:30 a.m, I was the full 10 centimetres dilated. Now, again, I go back to, I had been in that hospital since Wednesday. It took me until Monday morning, where are we? 6 o'clock to get to 4 centimetres dilated. And then in 3 hours, I had suddenly dilated the last 6 centimetres very, very, very quickly. And what they said was sometimes fast dilation can be stressful for the baby. And, you know, there were other things. So they decided to transfer me to the theatre. So one of the things that was particularly stressful at that point was I was told Ren was in a funny position, like the wrong angle for a vaginal birth, but that she was also too far down to have for me to have a C-section. Now, at that point, you know, and I'm exhausted at that point. We've been up all night. We've gone through a stressful few days. That was really, really hard to hear. And when Bob and I discussed it afterwards, you know, we both, what we heard, they didn't say this, but what we heard was that it was kind of either her or me. And that's really, really frightening to say. But I remember vividly thinking, well, what? How are you going to get her out? Are you just going to like cut me open to get her out in a non-seat? You know, it was terrifying. It actually was terrifying. And I think the shock of that being transferred to theatre, I shook uncontrollably. That was the most frightening part of all of it. And talking to Bob about it, you know, that's what he heard as well. And it was really scary. Like, we know how this ends and everything was fine. But that was, yeah. So we were transferred. I was shaking uncontrollably. I like really, really quite violently shaking. I remember just saying I couldn't stop. And I guess that is the shock. It's worth explaining at this point some of the things that the midwife at my afterthoughts appointment told me, and that is, if you're fully dilated, there can be more risks to mum and baby in having a C-section, because if the baby has descended into the pelvis, what needs to happen is they need to be raised back up again before the C-section, and this can be traumatic to the baby's neck and can increase the risk of more significant bleeding. But I just want you to hear from me now that I do know someone that this happened to and they were absolutely fine. So going back to Ren and her little head being at the wrong angle. So what they wanted to do was rotate her before I could potentially push her out. It's not always possible, but like I say, I was taken to theatre to give this a shot. And the reason they took me to the theatre was because if that wasn't possible, then I could really easily have a C-section. And they shaved my bikini line, and which was the most action my bikini line had seen for a long, long time, I can tell you, in preparation, just in case I needed to have a C-section. I will be honest and say that having waited all those days and asking previously about having a C-section and then going through all the labour, if I'd had to have a C-section at that point, I really would have been quite pissed off. Obviously, I probably wouldn't have been, because ultimately, all we want is for our baby to be born happy and healthy. So, you know, I'm sure I would have got over it. But I was really thinking, what? You could have done this at any point during the induction. Why am I now, days later, going to end up having a C-section? It was a little bit frustrating. However, what they did was they used something called a kiwi cup. Now, you possibly have heard of a Ventouse, and a kiwi cup is kind of similar, but where a Ventouse is attached to a machine, and so it's quite a powerful pump, a kiwi cup is manual. It's got like a hand pump on it. So they attach that to the baby's head and then try and twist the baby into the right position. The kiwi cup was applied, and a bit of a pump, they moved her round. I was given an episiotomy at this point, which has healed really, really well. I'm really, you know, I didn't know any of this was happening, to be honest. I wasn't told about the episiotomy or anything. Well, if I was, I had no recollection of it. But the doctors were amazing. And actually, just before we get to the main point, what I also want to say is, in the theatre, it was incredible, because we got taken there and there were what felt like hundreds of people, and each and every one of them took the time to come over and introduce themselves and tell me what their role was and, you know, just like make me feel calm. And it was a really amazing moment. It was very special. And I, you know, huge thanks to you, you know, specifically to my team, but to anyone who is in that position. And I love that you take the time to speak to the patient. It really helped me in a particularly difficult moment. So I just want to say thank you for doing that. It means a lot. So back to it. The kiwi cup was applied, couple of little hand pumps, episiotomy. Really not bad, don't worry. One push, and then the second push, and who arrived but our gorgeous, beautiful daughter, Ren. Yay! So this is 10:15 on Monday, the 10th of June, 2019. And she was literally rugby ball thrown onto my tummy. I had been really very clear about wanting that skin on skin time. And I've got a photo. Oh, honestly, the emotion. I'm so pleased that photo exists. It was just as she was thrown onto me. The umbilical cord was still attached. And the love that I felt, it was just the relief, everything, all the years. Oh, it makes me feel a bit emotional now. But all of the years that we had waited for this tiny little creature to arrive, it was just, the most incredible moment. It really, really was. Oh, hang on a minute. Right, so Ren was taken away quickly to be checked by a paediatrician, and I think Bob had a hold, and she was here and she was healthy, and honestly, like, it was just amazing. It really, really was. At 10:28 then, my placenta was delivered, and like, we've got a photo of it. It's massive. It's really massive. One of the things that I learned in my afterthoughts appointment was I lost 700 millilitres of blood at that time. Normal is up to 500, but I had lost more than that. And so if I ever get the opportunity to give birth again, I need to let my midwife know, because I would need an injection to discourage excess blood loss. And that is something that I would not have known unless I went to my birth afterthoughts appointment. So I do encourage you to go and have that appointment if you have the opportunity to. Just finishing off, like the last few hours then, we were moved to the recovery and we did have a little bit of an issue in the recovery. I was so keen to breastfeed, I really was, and I had been to lots of classes, I'd done research, you know, I really felt like I knew what I was going to be doing. And like, the truth is, I had no idea. The next 2 weeks were hell breastfeeding wise, but I got there in the end. But in the recovery ward, we had a really frightening experience, actually. So I was sat there, sat up ever so slightly, and I was trying to feed Ren. And I feel like an idiot saying this now, because now I watch videos back and I think that's what I should have been doing. And I'd even watched these videos before. But you are tired, you're on loads of pain relief, you know, you are all over the shop. And so I tried to feed Ren because I was really keen for it to happen as quickly as possible after she was born, in the traditional position. So cradled in your arm and feeding. And I think essentially what I did was smother her. And that's really hard for me to admit, actually, I'll be honest, incredibly hard for me to admit, because she did go quite grey and dusky, and actually she had to be taken away from us and checked over by the paediatrician, which was, oh my gosh, like, so frightening after everything we'd been through, to then think that I had done something to cause her any harm. What I should have been doing at that point, and this is just so that, you know, I want you to learn from this, because I don't want this to happen to anyone else. I should have just let her sit, or like lie face down on top of me, and then like search for my nipple like that. But thankfully she was okay, but it was frightening, and I don't want that to happen to you. Breastfeeding took a little bit longer. It didn't happen immediately. It didn't happen in that first couple of hours. But what we did have, which I'm really grateful for, was some colostrum. So come midday, we gave her some colostrum to make sure that she was starting to receive the nourishment that she needed. And that's where the birth afterthoughts notes finish, actually. And that's where kind of the main birth story finishes, I guess. We did spend the next few days. So she was born on the Monday morning and we were in the hospital until the Thursday. There were good and bad bits about that. It was lovely not to have to worry about food or washing or anything like that. However, there were a lot of midwives and each has got a slightly different take on how you breastfeed. And I felt under quite a lot of pressure and I felt quite confused by different people. I don't want to say manhandling me, because, you know, I knew what they were doing. They were, you know, doing their job and they were very polite and gentle and everything, but each had a slightly different technique, and I was all over the shop and I was desperate to breastfeed, and I just found that all very overwhelming, I'll be honest. And the other thing that happened while I was in hospital, and sorry, Dad, if you're listening, you might not want to hear this. It's not that bad. The thing that I was really grateful for staying in the hospital for was, because of my episiotomy, I was really scared about doing a poo. I was really scared. And I think, well, I'm saying this because I think that we need to talk about stuff like this a bit more, because I didn't know that that was going to be scary. So I'm telling you, if that happens to you and you're scared, I was scared. I was really nervous. There literally are leaflets and posters about this, about how you can do it. And you hold yourself, you know, and like, you've got loads of pads and everything going on at this point. So you don't literally need to hold yourself, but, you know, hold a pad there and you raise your knees up. So they have kind of little steps in front of you, or that you can move in front of you. And, you know, there are techniques and ways that they recommend that you should use the bathroom after you've had an episiotomy, you know, because I was just really nervous about putting any pressure down there because of the stitches. So there you go. I'm sharing with you. I hope it's not too much, but it is what it is. Other than that, you know, like, we went home, which was wonderful. On the journey home, my milk came in, which meant that my, and I remember my Insta story was boobs like bricks, please help. We stopped at a shop on the way home to get some cabbage because I'd heard the cabbage was good. It didn't do me any good at that point, I will be honest. And actually, we didn't really get our head round breastfeeding, like I say, for a good couple of weeks. And the reason that happened was because of one particular maternal health worker who was just incredible. I had a huge oversupply of milk. I know that, you know, it's a great problem to have, but it was an issue nonetheless. And the way it was explained to me, and I might have talked about this in previous episodes, but not for a while, so I'm going to say it here now. The way that it was explained to me was that if you blow up a balloon to kind of full capacity, and then you try and put your mouth around that balloon, you know, you can't because it's too solid. And that was the issue that Ren was having. And it meant that she wasn't putting on weight because she couldn't actually get the milk from me. And so what I needed to do was try and release some of the milk, the letdown, before I fed her. And you can do that by having a warm shower and kind of hand expressing yourself, a warm flannel. You know, there's lots and lots of different ways of doing that. But ultimately, that's what I needed to do. And what that meant was, if you know, going back to the balloon analogy, if you have a balloon that's half blown up, you can, because it's kind of malleable, you can get your chops around it. And that's what we were trying to achieve, so that Ren could actually kind of latch properly and get milk from me. And we did get there. Like, those first 2 weeks, I keep saying it, they were pretty bleak. They were quite tough, really tough, but we did get there. And I'm really grateful that we did. So yeah, that brings me to the end of our birth story. I hope that was everything you wanted to hear. Did you want to hear it? I don't know. But if you have any questions at any point, then don't hesitate to get in touch. If you are heading in to have your little one soon, then know that it is scary, but it is wonderful. And I know that isn't the case for everyone. I know that sometimes people have really, really difficult births. And I urge you to have your afterthoughts. You know, if you have any queries or any questions, you know, go and speak to them, because I have been told on really good authority that it can help, particularly, like I say, with traumatic births. So, but hopefully that isn't you and that won't be you, and you will just have kind of a lovely romantic view, like I do, of your birth, of your little miracle. That's it, other than to say thank you so much for listening. Have a lovely day, and I will be back with a new episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.